Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. It's the perennial question, are we a product of how we were raised, or is our identity hardwired by our genetic inheritance? The questions are explored in Sue Halpern's new novel, What We Leave Behind. When her adopted mother dies in a freak accident, high school senior Melody Marcus doubles down on her refusal to learn anything about her birth parents. In this age of 23 and me, though, that may not be possible, and the secrets hidden in her DNA threaten to upend everything that she knows about herself and about her family. For Candace Milton, a successful woman in her 40s, the collateral damage from her parents' tortured marriage has led to a life of intentional unattachment. A chance encounter with a friend of Melody's father will challenge this assumption and force her to reimagine who she is and who she might become. Sue Halpern is the author of 7 books of fiction and nonfiction. A former New Yorker staff writer, she is a scholar in residence at Middlebury College, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Sue Halpern to this week's book show.
It's so nice to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. I feel like I can't publish a book without talking to Joe.
This book is fascinating to me because somewhere, I don't know, I had been reading it for a day or so, and my wife said to me, oh, it's Sue Halpern's book. What is it about? And I said, I don't really know yet. And I thought, what a lovely thing to say. Like, it is hard to sort of pin it down for quite a while going through it, and I wonder what that's like to write.
So it's funny that you would say that because people would say to me, what's this book about? And I would think, I wrote it, but I am having a hard time with that elevator pitch, you know? And then I thought, well, it's because I live in a place where there are no elevators. I knew what the book was about. I mean, I knew what I wanted to write about, and I knew that I wanted to string it along so that you wouldn't necessarily know, not you personally, Joe, but that the reader wouldn't necessarily know from the get-go what was going to happen, because I think that can be really frustrating for a reader. I wanted the reader to think, why is this happening? And who are these people, and how are they connected? So instead of having a kind of very straightforward narrative, ultimately it is a very straightforward narrative, but it also kind of spools itself out, I think.
When you said you knew what you wanted to write about, what is it ultimately that you wanted to write about, to explore, a question that you had in your mind that you wanted to explore?
Yeah, I was interested in this question about what we take from the people who raise us. You know, it's that sort of old question about nature versus nurture. But, you know, if you were going to write a book directly about that, it would look very different than the novel that I wrote. And so I wanted to explore that in a couple of different dimensions. And that's why there are 2 narratives that kind of run along a parallel track until eventually they intersect. But they're going on a parallel track because, in fact, they're answering this question or exploring this question differently. If you think about this question of nature versus nurture, it's not one thing or another. Therefore, they have to come together, but they also are very different.
While they come together, it's not a direct pairing. It's somewhat an off-kilter way that they come together, which is also part of this puzzle, if you will, because you don't see how it's going to fit, and then you realize it. And that's really interesting because it's on the periphery, but very much fits together and brings these people into the same room.
I was interested in exploring this question from one of the characters. You're sort of exploring it primarily from genetics, but you don't know that when you're reading it. It's a person who's adopted, so you think you're reading it primarily about how she was raised. And similarly with the other character, who is an older than our primary character, she too, you don't really know like what it is about her that answers this question, or at least raises this question, until you kind of learn more and more about her story.
So tell us about Melody, who is the young woman at the center of this, and who very much is at the beginning dealing with a tragedy and then going through and trying to answer a lot of questions along the way.
Yeah. So Melody is 17. She's a senior in high school. She's adopted. Her adoptive mother dies in this kind of dramatic way, out of the blue, literally. And this leads to all sorts of questions. She's a person who never wanted to know about her birth mother or birth father. She didn't want to have that in her life. But now she's lost her adoptive mother. And so these questions have now come up, like, who am I? Who is this woman who raised me? And it's also like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I think I won't go to college, which turns out to be blasphemy in the circles that she was raised in. So she's dealing with this question about who she is. And as I say, she never wanted to know what her sort of birth story was. And then we have the other character, Candace. Candace is like in her 40s. She's very successful at her job. Her job is her life. She's the sort of person who never really asked the question, am I happy? That seems like a pointless question to a person like Candace. And so we learn about her and really about this question of, you know, what she learned from her parents and their kind of crappy marriage and how that determined kind of the course of her life until something happened.
Sue Halpern is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is What We Leave Behind, and it is published by Harper. I am curious about something you said a moment ago about Melody in the sense of the blasphemy of not wanting to go to college. Well, it's worse than that. She's going to be a farmer in Vermont.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. But I thought the section where she goes to a college and sort of realizes what that life is like is really fascinating.
Well, you know, I teach at a college and my editor said, how did you really get all that? And I was like, I live in that world and I think I understand these people, these young people. I hope I do. So yeah, she goes to visit a family friend at Wesleyan, except she can't remember if it's Wellesley, the women's college, or Wesleyan, the other college. And she goes there and, you know, everyone's playing Frisbee and going to these classes that have crazy names and are about, you know, things like, you know, the colonial whatever, whatever. And she's just like, is this real? Is this like a real thing that people do? Maybe I'll just go dig in the dirt. Maybe that's a better way to spend my time. And her father is, you know, appalled. But she does go and dig in the dirt, and it is a good thing.
What is this young woman and the relationship with her father? It almost seems fraught, and it's difficult to, boy, he's trying hard, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't fraught until her mother dies.
Right.
He was the good, you know, the good cop, bad cop. He was the good cop. And he's the sort of guy everyone likes, tells lots of jokes, and is kind of happy-go-lucky guy. And, you know, then his world is totally upended as well. And now you've got these two people living in a house without the kind of center. And, you know, will it hold? And, you know, Melody doesn't really know how to deal with this father who is not the father she knew, because now her mother's gone and this man is broken. And he doesn't really know how to deal with her either. And because he's so involved with his own grief. And so they're kind of circling around each other. It takes quite a while for them to get back.
It's also, you mentioned this at the beginning, but it's such an unusual death that she becomes known because she's the daughter of that woman who was killed this way. And that gives an odd fame?
Yeah, I mean, you think about it. You know, it's on the news. The news teams show up and on their street, and you know, they interview the neighbors, and the neighbors say all the things that neighbors always say. You know, she seemed like a very nice lady, or she waved to me when they was driving by, and you know, and then Melody goes to school, and everyone knows that her mother has died, and not only just died, but you know, died in this kind of horrific way, and she doesn't want to be that person. She doesn't want to be known for that. She doesn't want to be known, really. But now she's that girl, and when she goes to Wesley and not Wellesley, she's happy briefly because she thinks nobody knows. And she's not that girl anymore. Then it turns out someone tells, and she is that girl again.
When the fragments start to come together, and you get this sense that there is a connection, and I am interested in the idea of how many shots you took at that to get it to the way you wanted it to read right, because it's so carefully written.
Yeah, that's a really good question. The first draft wasn't there, and the person who read the book multiple times and was the most helpful. And, you know, basically would have made me cry if I hadn't written many other books before. Just kept saying, and it's not quite working yet. It's not quite working yet. You sure you don't want to just lose this character? You know, and I was like, no, I know what I'm doing. I just haven't done it yet. And so, you know, I just kept at it until she was satisfied. That would be my agent.
Okay. Bill's off the hook.
Yeah, was like, Bill's my biggest cheerleader. And he was like, this is great. And then I gave it to Kim, my agent. She was like, go back to, you know, turn around, go back to go, you know, work on it some more. And I did. And she was right. And she just kept, you know, she would read it and she would tell me that I hadn't. And she wouldn't tell me what to do. She would just say, no. Not yet. And we did that a couple times, and then finally she was like, "Yes, this is it. Okay."
Because when it comes and it, as I said, when the pieces start to come together, it is so careful, and yet it still packs a punch. And I didn't know where it was going. I mean, I think that's what's really fun in that regard.
When you're writing a book, often you don't know what you're doing. I think that it seems like that's wrong, right? You probably have to know what you're doing. But a lot of times you don't know what you're doing. But the one thing I knew was I knew where I wanted it to go. And so the question was, how do I get there? And there, you know, some people are really good, like, you know, they write these outlines and they have spreadsheets and post-it notes and all this other stuff, and they're unbelievably organized. I am not organized. I just have an idea, and then I have to sort of figure out like how to make that idea happen. And so it's a lot of hit or miss, a lot of miss. eventually, hopefully you hit, but it takes a while.
But isn't it also coming to the point where the hit, yes, but paring it down to almost its simplest form of, okay, this is it. Yeah. Almost coming up with that elevator pitch of, this is where I want this to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, when I teach writing, I always tell students, like, concision is your friend. It can be very disturbing as the writer, because you have to throw things away. You tend to throw a lot of things away until you get to the place where you really want to be. But I think that's kind of what writing is about. It's, you know, getting to the really to the essence of the thing that you want to say. And sometimes it just takes a lot of trial and error and throwing stuff away and hearing it out loud and understanding your characters, and then like leaving them alone for a while and letting them talk to you until they tell you what you're supposed to be doing.
Is it hard to leave them alone for a while?
No. I mean, it used to be, because I write something and I'd be like, I'm done. Please read this. It's great. I didn't really say that. But, you know, I'd be thinking, oh, I've done this. It's done. Read it. It's finished. And now, no. I wrote a draft of a book probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8 months ago, and I haven't looked at it since. I will go back to it in a couple weeks. Because I think having that distance, you get to read as if you were the reader, as if instead of having that emotional connection to the thing that you're writing, you can read it kind of as if you never saw it before in your life, which maybe as you get older, you maybe didn't.
But you're letting it marinate as opposed to saying, I don't know if this is worth the...
Yeah, no, I think about it a lot, and I get ideas about it, and I think that's really healthy, because I don't feel the need to just, you know, put it out there. I feel like I can let it sit and hopefully make it better, and then when I give it to my agent, she's not going to give it back to me 4 times, but this time she'll be like, oh yeah, this is close anyhow.
Sue Halpern is our guest. The new novel is What We Leave Behind, and it is published by Harper Perennial. I think it's safe to say that this is really unlike anything that you've written in the past.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that writing novels gives you the opportunity to, you know, explore different ways of telling stories. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think stories... they tell you how they want to be told. So I don't know. It felt pretty organic.
Right. Well, the common thread is you.
Yeah, me. I'm the writer.
Right. I mean, you're the one who's telling the story. Yeah. So that's the common thread.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, it's different in that it's exploring completely different themes than I've explored before. Although one of the things that's sort of interesting about this book is that one of the books I wrote way back and 100 years ago was this book about memory called Can't Remember What I Forgot, which I'm sure we discussed. In that book, I had to learn a lot about genetics, a subject I knew nothing about. I still probably know very little about, but in fact, I probably learned a lot of it from the book called Genetics for Dummies and some children's books about genetics. Which, by the way, if you want to learn something about science and it's like totally over your head, just get the children's version, because in fact, it will explain what you're looking for in a way that is actually accessible. So anyhow, I had done a lot of research on genetics because I was writing about memory and memory loss and dementia. And then I ended up writing this long piece for The New Yorker on the search for a particular Alzheimer's gene. And it was a gene, it was a genetics, and so I really had to learn it. This knowledge, or, you know, a little bit of knowledge about genetics, was sort of also in my head when I was approaching this story, because, you know, we think about what it is we get from our parents, whether it's, you know, left-handedness or our eyesight or whatever it is, or our mannerisms or, you know, those things. And how does that work? What does it mean for these genes, these things that are like invisible to us, to determine so much of who we are? And so some of that genetics research kind of was percolating in my head when I was doing this.
And the stories that were told as children, and of course we believe them because we assume they're the truth.
Yeah. And in this case, the story that Melody was told was really no story. Like, her parents, I think, at some point wanted to tell her the story of her origins, but she just was saying no. And as weird as that sounds, like, if, you know, if I were adopted, I would, you know, I would want to know everything. But she didn't. And I have these two friends, both of whom were adopted, and neither of them were interested at all in learning anything about their birth parents until they had children, and then it became necessary to learn the medical part right. of their genetics, but they still wanted to have nothing to do and not know nothing about the stories of those birth parents. And so I knew that was a thing. Like, some people are like that, and my character is like that.
Does being a journalist, is that always with you as an author of a novel?
Someone who read the book early on said, there's so many ideas in this book. I think it's because you're a journalist. And I don't know. I mean, I think...
Was that a criticism? There's too many things to think about in this.
No, I don't. I hope not. I think what she meant was, like, it was worldly. Like, it wasn't abstract. Right. Like, there are things in the book that are, like, real in the world and things that you care about. I guess what I think it maybe works in the other direction, which is that when you're writing at least longer pieces of journalism, you still have this need to tell the story. You still have to figure out, how do you tell this? Like, even when writing a book about memory, like, who are the characters? What do they represent? What are they telling us? You know, there's got to be a story arc or something that pulls you along. Otherwise, it's just going to be like fact, 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 fact. And so I think that having a sense of how you tell a story is really important, whether or not you're writing fiction or nonfiction.
Do you miss anything about writing for The New Yorker?
I just wrote a piece.
So no.
No, I mean, here's the funny thing about that. I was writing a lot. I was writing probably every 2 weeks.
Right.
Right. And I was writing things that were really, like, depressing. I was writing about, like, the end of democracy and the fact that AI is going to, you know, ruin our lives and, you know, all this stuff that I found, you know, seemed important and necessary to alert people to. But at the same time, it's, like, really overwhelming in a funny way. And the reason why I started writing this book was because I wanted something as a counterpoint to all of that, like the world that was just sort of coming at us. And for me, it was really coming at me because I was, like, spending all of my time thinking about it, and I wanted to think about something else. So no, I mean, no. And if there's something I really want to write about, I'll probably write about it.
Right. It's a question that, I mean, I get a lot too of just how do you, because you have to talk about what's going on and think about what's going on. And I mean, yeah, we get paid for it, sort of, but, you know, it's hard.
It's really, really hard, and it's particularly hard now, and I live with Bill, and, you know, Bill's writing about, you know, the end of the world and the planet, and, you know, there's just so much of, you know, people say, boy, your house must be really depressing. I don't think it is, but... But yeah, I mean, we're, like, thinking about things that are really, like, monumental. And so writing a book that was sort of a mental vacation for me, even though I was, you know, obviously thinking about it and caring about my characters and caring about the ideas in it, it wasn't really about the end of the world or the end of the democracy or anything as heavy as that.
We should mention your husband is best-selling author and environmentalist, Bill McKibben. I remember you telling me this a while ago that, you know, when we have dinner at night, we're not usually talking about the end of the world.
No, we're probably talking about our dog or our daughter or now our grandson or, you know, our friends.
Right. Do you always have something, I mean, you mentioned this other project, so you'll go back to that now?
Yeah, I did. I finished a draft and then I'd started doing a lot of journalism, some for The New Yorker, New York Review of Books, The Nation. And I just finished the last piece I did for the New York Review of Books hasn't been edited yet, so that'll happen. And this New Yorker piece, and then I'll probably go back to that and not do journalism for a while, and just try to focus on this other book and see if I can make it work. By then, the world will, God knows what will have happened. I'll go back to it.
It doesn't seem to, but I ask the question, even in your mind as a writer, does the world of what's going on have an impact on the fiction that you write? I mean, would you look at a book and say, okay, that's the one I wrote during COVID, or this is the one I wrote during the first administration or the second administration?
Not really. Partly it's because, ideas, who knows where they come from? Maybe they come from the world that we're living in, and maybe they don't. It's a little mysterious. So I'm not sure. But I also, I've lost sense of time a lot of it. Like, I know I was writing a lot about COVID during COVID, a lot about COVID. I was writing a lot about sort of the end of democracy during the end of democracy, and I will continue to do that. But I won't do it in my fiction. I just think of fiction as sort of a respite, and I also think of it as a place for us to learn empathy, which then we can take into this other world that we are living in that is so fraught. But I think the last thing you want to do, I think, for me, the last thing I really want to do is read a novel that's sort of telling me about the world that I'm living in, that I'm finding really challenging to live in. I want to help people feel connected to each other and to, obviously to my characters and me, maybe, but to learn this empathy. And I think that's what we get from fiction. Can get it from nonfiction as well, obviously, but I think it's nice to have a kind of mental vacation from this world that we're living in, but at the same time recognizing that we're in it together, and that we have these connections that we need in order to kind of overcome some of the harshness of the world that we're living in.
Sue Halpern's new novel is What We Leave Behind. It is published by Harper. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke, and to the Northshire Bookstore, where this program was recorded before a live audience, northshire.com. The latest on National Productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at WAMC.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.